everyone, and welcome to Minute 95 of Season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, wait a second, my guest isn't here. Whoa. There are these two guys that have just shown up. They're wearing matching tweed jackets. They both have matching tweed hats. And they also have these very strange mustaches. And what's really weird is they have like a cowl underneath these hats. I can't recognize who these people are. Wait a second. Are these both Niall and John from the Batman?
Hey, I'm Mr. Blue.
I'm Mr. Bat.
Have you come to hijack my podcast?
Yes, precisely. And I think you'll find it's not a strange mustache. It's a cool mustache what I've got, Rob, okay?
Yeah, get it right. They're in. They're hip.
Okay, all right. I'll take that. But, I mean, Batman doesn't – are there any incarnations of Batman that have mustache?
No, I don't think – I think it's been the thing I've kind of joked about on the main show is that, like, Bruce Wayne should have a mustache. And then when he takes it off, like it'll just be a permanent, like – fake mustaches he's wearing, and then basically like every time it's like, well, why would he Bruce Wayne couldn't possibly grow and ungrow a mustache in that amount of time, so he couldn't possibly be Batman.
That would actually be good, like genuinely be a good thing. It would throw people off a lot more.
It would be even better though if it was Batman had the mustache all the time. Bruce Wayne's clean shaven, so but Batman has a mustache, so therefore it can't be that guy. but who has a mustache like Batman?
I would love it if it wasn't even real. It was built into the mask.
That's right.
I'm thinking like, and then he just Batman constantly setting up people he doesn't like to have like, I've modeled my mustache on that other millionaire who I hate, so maybe everyone will think it's him.
Maybe he has like a twirly mustache. Yeah.
Oh. Fantastic.
Every time the goon, like there's like street thugs like quaking.
Maybe.
Oh, but hey, but I'm back, if it turns out, from just yesterday. So
that's right. So welcome back.
Crazy random happens.
Yeah. And John, thank you for joining us. Maybe if you're nice today, I'll let you come back for a few more episodes later this week.
Oh, wouldn't that be a delight for your listeners? I'm sure they'll never get sick of me.
Well, why would they? There's no reason to get sick of you. Not at all.
Something I'll never get sick of, the outfits you described. I'm just going to get it out of the way. I don't care. The outfits the villains were in this, incredible. Niall, you need to do a costume of this, and no one will think it's a costume.
Well, that's the thing. I think the other day, John, you were saying to me, like, oh, yeah, like the Mr. Green's outfit just reminded me of, like, how you look in general. And, like, I think when I started getting that look, I was like, yeah, because I was still young and hip. So I was like, yeah, now this is a cool alternative look. And now I'm like, oh, I just look like a 45-year-old man.
A 45-year-old
man from the 1970s.
Yeah, because people that age, they don't look like this now. So it's still cool and different. You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's because they're all dead.
Well, yeah. Very good point.
I don't know if there's any. Is there any of the main cast of Pelham 123 still going? I think they are all dead now, right?
I believe they're all dead. I don't think there's anyone who's still around. I mean, we know that Jerry Stiller passed away. We definitely know that Walter Matthau passed away. Martin Balsam,
Robert Shaw passed away. Like
didn't make it
like 2 minutes after this film was finished, basically.
That's right. What about my favorite
Joe Welcome?
He's still alive. Edgar Alexander's still alive. There you go.
Yay!
Yeah, he might.
I kind of wanted after watching this minutes for Mr. Gray to have a musical number to the tune of "You're Welcome" from Moana. But he's like, what can I say except I'm Joe Welcome.
Joe Welcome.
What can I say? Joe Welcome, not you're welcome.
Well, we'll get to that. that's not until a couple of seconds into the minute.
All right, so minute 95 begins with the passengers being relieved and ends with Garber reminding Rico about the list.
Hey, Jerry Stiller playing the role he was born to play, Rico Suave, of course, in this. I'm so happy, though, to be back for this fifth minute, Rob, because I was worried I wasn't going to get any Jerry Stiller content. I was like, oh, thank Christ, he's actually here. Because Jerry Stiller, one of my all-time favorite characters in anything ever is, of course, Frank Costanza from Seinfeld. So just ecstatic to see that he's in this. And he looks exactly the same because he was just born looking like that, and then just maintain that exact physique and exact, you know, that one hair ahead on that thick, lustrous mane was lost for this guy
The only thing that
throughout his
changed
entire life.
is early in his career, he didn't have a mustache. That's the only difference.
No.
I appreciate it when an actor has like a look and they
Maybe.
just stick with it.
Yeah, maybe after he watched this movie, he decided that he wanted a mustache.
Yeah, it's a fake mustache that whole time,
I'm going to
too. He's
keep the
like,
mustache.
no one would ever suspect that I'm actually Ben Stiller's father.
That's right. So we ended things yesterday with the red light being tripped and the train actually coming to a halt and everyone flying all over the place. And that this minute continues with that, with everyone on the floor basically being extremely happy that the train has finally stopped. I mean, they probably have no idea where they are. You know, they're all down at the harbor or wherever it is, but you know, the train stopped. So
Yeah,
let's hope no
yeah.
one put a
You
bomb
can
on the
tell
train.
there's a, you know, it's definitely a sense of euphoria going through there because there's no way otherwise people will be happy to be on a subway floor. Like that
Oh
train,
God,
like
yeah.
that floor of that train must be absolutely disgusting, particularly New York in the 70s.
Oh God, imagine the diseases you're gonna get from that. Because you're gonna tempt Hollywood to remake it again.
That's a good point.
It is June now, I guess. They'll be like, what's it been since the last one? Like
It's been
near 20 years. So
16 years.
we don't 16 years.
no, we
So
don't.
yeah.
It's not due. We don't need it again. We've got it. This.
We have to
We
do it with iPhones, John. We
did not
have to
need the other
know
one.
what would Pelham 123 be like with iPhones.
Yeah,
It's a nightmare. It's a
no, not needed.
No,
Stay away
no.
from those.
In fact, you didn't need either of the other two remakes either. Like this one
That's
was like,
true.
it's like, yeah, this is it. It's perfect.
I've been talking about that for 95 episodes that we don't need those. So.
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch them now out of curiosity, though. But we'll talk more about that when I may return, I suppose.
Yeah,
But
I think
yeah.
the remake spin will be the Subway hot takes guy takes over, but it's just a train full of celebs.
Oh, no, there you go.
So
That might actually be funny, at least. Yeah.
yeah, it'll be like influencer Delaney Rowe gives her hot. She has to
Oh.
give a hot take per hour, or otherwise a hostage is gonna. Otherwise, he's
Sold.
gonna turn around and shoot Ed Harris or someone.
You've pulled me back in, Niall. I'm in. Delaney Rowe, get her in it.
She was on one of the hot takes things, by the way. So I can't remember what hers was, but
And they have
she did have one.
they've disinfected floors on the train.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be the thing. That would be a PR campaign to show you how nice the subway floors are.
Yeah, they start eating breakfast off the floor. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so clean, you can eat your eggs off it.
One of the demands of the hijacker is like, tell me where you get your fabulous cleaning products for, because these trains are immaculate now.
You know, we get to see different passengers, and then we get a shot of the old man, and the old man goes, "I told you it was stopped, didn't I?" You know, even though everyone's on the floor, it still stopped, you know.
Well, that's the thing too, is like technically he never would have been wrong because even if it crashed, he could be like, well, technically it stopped, huh? Like, what is
Imagine that. I got you on a technicality. Right, your body's in 10 pieces, but still,
like
I was
his
right.
dying breath was like, I was right. Technically, I was right, which as we all know is the best form of being correct.
Yes.
Yes. And then
I love his reaction though. It's so funny. Like, because I he's saying, you know, oh yeah, I told you it would stop. But the look on his face and the way he says
he's
it
happy.
seems like he wasn't actually sure. He's like
No.
relieved that he was right. Like, oh God.
He's got like a big smirk on his face.
Yeah. I think that is like I think in the minutes prior, because he had a real like, it's gotta like he was trying to convince himself, but I think he was very rattled because like the
Couldn't
train was
understand why it
going
wasn't used.
ballistic, so he was just like, oh shit, I might not. Oh wait, no, I knew it the whole time. No, totally, I knew it the whole
Was
time.
right. Oh God. It's fantastic. Although it's
Exactly.
followed up by one of my favorite things in this, my spirit animal, the drunk woman.
Yes, and the drunk woman, you know, leans up. She gets up from the, you know, from lying on the bench. She gives like a huge hiccup, and then she says, "What do you say? 42nd Street already?" They passed 42nd
She's
Street a hell of a long time ago.
a rare actor here, like as in most people can't act drunk, I find. Like it's one of the worst and most embarrassing things to see on film.
Well, how do you know
And
she's a
she
good actor?
actually looks like they just fed her loads of booze. Like, poured it down her neck.
Maybe she's not acting.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
You never hear about that, like, for, you know, method actors. You never hear about, like, oh, yeah, so I was playing a drunk, so I had to get, like, absolutely blackout drunk for 5 months. Just, like, relentlessly boozing.
I think I appreciate, you know, getting in character and things, but I think maybe getting drunk like that, there comes a point where, like, that's going to impact your performance. I don't care how good you are, you know? It's a bit like, you know, I go on stage, I can have a couple of drinks and go on stage and it improves my performance, but there's a line.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to learn that line through practice. It's like one drink too many, and you're like, oh no, I'm falling over. This is not good.
What I really love about this thing with the drunk lady, though, is that it's basically a variation on my favorite cliche joke that, like, I think that's so cliche, people don't put it in things, like, seriously anymore. But the whole thing of, like, someone seeing something crazy, like a drunk person seeing something crazy and then, like, sniffing the bottle and throwing it away or something. Like, it's such, like, it's so old hat now that I don't think anyone would actually try to put that in a film, like, without it being kind of a piss take, basically.
It's always a joke now. Yet somehow this, while being funny, it doesn't come across silly.
No,
it feels real. Like, she seems like someone I might have met on the train, you know?
Right. I mean, I think the funny thing is also that we've been seeing her on the train the entire time, and that's why it's sort of the joke works. You know, there was even a point where, you know, where the hijackers just ignore her. They're like, oh, let's just ignore the drunk, and that's it. You know, and you know, we've discussed this in the past. That it's too bad that she wasn't the undercover cop. That would have been the perfect.
Oh my god, that would have been hilarious, and she just pops up right at the end. I've got you.
I was undercover cop who went, like, way too method. And then they're like, what do you mean you missed the whole hijack and you were right there?
I was trying to sell the performance, damn it, and I passed out.
Yeah, sorry, Chief. It's just like that Hennigan's, that packs a wallop, man, I'll tell you.
Oh, bless her. I love her. She is my idol.
Goodbye to those characters, I think, for you, Rob, after all this time. Now that's the last you see of all the passengers.
We don't get to see them ever again.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point when you think about it. Like, considering this is about hijacking a train with hostages, the film sort of discards them. Yeah, it goes, you don't care about this.
Yeah.
Well,
it's an interesting way, because most movies would focus on the hostage experience, wouldn't they?
Like me and Rob talked about that in previous minutes. It's like, yeah, they don't, like, they're literally called, like, the old man, the co-ed, the drunk. You know, it's like, there's no, like, oh, these aren't, like, three-dimensional characters, though. They're just, like, pawns within the grander scheme of what's happening.
That's an interesting way of doing it.
Right, but it's not like Die Hard where, you know, the only character they follow afterwards is Holly, you know, and, you know, John then asks her secretary, where is Holly? That's it, you know. Yeah. Other than that, where they also discard everyone because they're
running. I mean, but like in Speed, you get to know the hostages, though, because you're like, oh, it's Alan Ruck and it's Beth Grant and it's it's the driver who got, you know, all that kind of stuff. They get different strokes, different films. You know, they're gonna approach things differently.
Yeah. It's interesting. I like it because it's not about that. It's almost like a It's almost like a Wrath of Khan movie. Like, you know, the two opposing sides, and they don't meet. But I mean, they meet for like 2 seconds. But
yeah. Well, we get that in this. Yeah, it's very much a Wrath of Khan scenario. Only there's no, like, long lingering grudge.
Mm.
It's very much like they meet, one of them kills himself, and then Walter Matthau's just like, oh man, okay, just gets on with his day.
Yeah.
That's right. Now let's find the fourth guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now we're back in the transit authority. We see Rico on the phone, and he goes, "Get a list out on the wire, will you, Wally? Tell him it's top priority." And Garber shows up and goes, "What do you got, Rico?" He goes, "Well, we got positive identification on three dead men."
Mm.
And he gives him, like, these little note cards, and it's funny. He's talking about three dead men, but he gives him two cards.
I noticed that. What's up with that?
No, because these two people have records.
Yeah, I think it's because they only ID Mr. Blue through, like, the not visa people, but, like, the, you know,
that's it. They do mention that. Yeah,
immigration. They don't have a file on him, but they just know who he is because of that and stuff.
Well, that makes sense, especially in an age where there's no, like, mass use of computers and things.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
they won't have, like, these days, you know, the in America, they could probably pull up the UK records somehow, you know, through some service. But
back good, then, like now, we're apparently heading towards everyone's going to have ID on them, government mandated ID on them all the time anyway. So,
yeah, well, we'll see if that. No one is happy with that.
No,
it's
no
quite
one.
Funny. All sides are happy with
that. Yeah, literally pitched this thing and everyone went, no, we're not doing that.
Right. So we get to see the first index card, and it shows. A picture of Mr. Brown, who looks very different than what we noticed in the movie. And
yeah, it looks like he's got like an 80s mullet going on, which is quite impressive for 1974. I think it's just the shadow behind him, but I really thought he was rocking a mullet there for a second.
Oh wow! Until you mentioned it right now, I thought he had a mullet. But you're right; it is just a shadow. That's really interesting. But he also looks very stoned.
Yeah. It could be. Maybe he's like, that's the extra twist is that like he's actually a time traveler from 1985, and he hopped back 11 years, and he's like, I'm telling you, this hijacking scheme's great.
Well, no,
he got high, and he's like, oh god damn it, I can't do anything.
I was gonna hijack a train.
He's working from Home Improvement, so you know, Tim the Tool Man Teller set up a time machine and brought him back 20 years. You know. So it says on the card that his name is George Stever, and it says St. Louis Police. And then it gives him his number 102316, sex male, color white, and then height 73.5 inches, weight 195 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes, age 30, born on January 1st, 1944 in Tucson, Arizona. He has a scar on his left elbow, which we never got to see because he was, you know, wearing a tweed jacket.
Yeah. Deleted scene of him telling all the hostages, like, hey, check out this scar on my elbow. And Mr. Bloom and like, what the hell are you doing, asshole?
They'll identify you. God damn it. Put that away.
That's right. And then change of address says unknown. And then additional arrests for armed robbery. And it says verified by Detective Rose on November 3rd, 1972. Now, my question is okay, he's been arrested for armed robbery. He's 30 years old. And they're giving us this card from, let's say, a year and a half ago. Why is he not in prison?
Well, the justice system, you know. I don't know what it's like where you are, but here, you know, they don't want to put you away these days, so they'll put you away for a couple of months, and then it's like, well, we'll let you out, but don't do anything else.
Yeah. I mean, you got like what this week, the highly publicized return of Allison Mack, and you look at what she does, like, oh, she was like the co-leader of a sex cult, and she got 2 years house arrest and 2 years in prison. Yeah. And you're like, that's nothing. What the hell? Like, you look at the charges, you're like, that's insane that that's what you got. But yeah, it could be. It's like, yeah, he served.
Did Clark Kent know what was really going on in, you know, in the school.
Yeah, that's a Smallville comeback special. I want to see.
And let me just clarify as well. I am actually someone who I believe in being a bit. I don't want to say lenient, but I don't think just imprisoning people is always the solution, right? Mm. But
then they go and hijack.
Armed robberies may be a bit of a step too far into like, maybe he does need to be locked away. You know? But then I suppose it could be like, why did he do it? What
The vibe you get for, because it's only the one charge though. Because like, if it had been like 12 armed robberies or something, they might be able to go like, yeah, maybe, you know, only 30. You know, he's kind of in 70s terms. He's just a kid.
Kinda maybe thing. He's in loads of debt. And,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but I'm also a bit sus though, because like that, born on New Year's Day. Anytime I see that with anybody, I'm like, that's not real. That's is this this guy's real identity? Like, it's, you know,
no, that's usually not real.
It's laziness.
Because I mean, I can't say too much, but I have a government job, and basically, I have to. I'm trying to think how I can word this without saying too much. Basically, I have to communicate with solicitors about asylum seekers and things like that.
Yeah.
I have to talk to them. And when people don't know their date of birth, because a lot of people in like other countries, they might not have records and things, and they don't know genuinely, because they don't keep the same sort of things that we do. They'll always just put first of the first.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, we don't know.
No, I get it in the libraries too. Like, we get people coming in who have like freshly come to Liverpool, and we get like big groups of them, and they're clearly people from like all over the world, and they'll come over in groups, can barely speak English, but they're signing up for the library. And every time you do like five of them in a row, and you're like, "Can I get your date of birth?" And every time they're like, "First of January," and I'm like,
"Yeah, there you go."
Oh, clearly not. But okay, like I'm happy to put it down anyway. But
so it makes me suspicious when you see anyone with it, and there will be millions of people who have it for real.
Well, it's like our friend, our mutual friend John Coralie, born on the 1st of January.
Oh,
she tells people she's born on the 7th of July because she says she wants people to actually celebrate her birthday.
Yeah, I get it.
And she's
yeah.
like, I've gone as far away as I can from my like you know the exact midpoint of the year, basically, to be like, okay, now. Now I can tell people this is my birthday.
I'd do the same thing because it would be horrible, wouldn't it? People would say, "Oh, happy birthday," but it feels like they're too preoccupied.
That's gonna be too. Like I think, "Oh, you want to go out for my birthday meal?" People are like, "No, I'm hungover because yeah. like, it was New Year's Eve last night. I'm not doing that."
Yeah.
And everyone will be all booked up, and it'll be a whole day. Like, no, you're not getting like. That's why I don't understand people who like decide like, "Yeah, we're getting married. We're having it on Christmas Day." You're like, "What the hell are you doing that for?" Like have it as far away from other holidays as possible, so you can like make a thing of it during the year. Instead of being like, "Yeah, we're lumping all our stuff together,"
yeah,
so we only have this one big giant expense every year or whatever.
And if you're gonna hijack a train, don't do it, around a holiday either. That's terrible. People aren't gonna be paying attention to you. It's the one time for you.
No.
So I have a friend that what he does is on his socials, on all his social stuff. Every like 3 months, he changes his birthday, just to because of the fact that he's aware of the fact that people don't remember when his birthday is. So this way, people get messages on whether it's Facebook or whatever social network that they're using, right? So people automatically just send happy birthday. They don't even think about the fact of if it really is your birthday or not. And he gets a kick out of it that four times a year people wish him a happy birthday because they just don't realize. And didn't I wish you 3 months ago? It's like people don't do that.
it must be some other guy.
Apparently, that's Chris Walken's tactic. He says like every time he'll make multiple films in a year, and every time he says that he picks a day to look like really sad, and everyone's like, "What's up, Chris?" He's like, "Oh well, it's my birthday, and no one remembered." And everyone goes, "Oh no, no!" And they go out and like buy a cake for him and get him presents and stuff. But it's like, "Oh no, happy birthday, guys, happy birthday." He's like, "Oh, thank you, thank you." Goes off 2 months later on the set of something else. It's like, "Oh yeah, it's my birthday." No one remembered. "Oh, happy birthday, Chris." He's just like, "Yeah," he's just become addicted to the cake now. It's like, "Yeah, I love getting the like five birthday cakes a year, basically."
Genius, genius.
I also wish there was a deleted scene in this, like in the, in the cockpit of the train, as it were, and it was Mr. Brown showing his scar, and then Mr. Blue being like, "I got that beat," and like rolling up his leg and just been like, "Look at that, that was a 2-footer did that to me."
I'm so glad you said that because as soon as it was mentioned, this scar thing, that's all I could think about.
Yeah. Because again,
Mr. Blue like telling the entire train about his history with the Indianapolis. And I was like, "Yeah, apparently some guy in the Indianapolis. He was going on about the doll's eyes. He was on the sharks.
Like a doll's eyes."
He went from being really refined and British to being like a kind of sea shanty-ish pirate for some reason.
That's right. And then we move on to the next card, and it's
the best card.
Giuseppe Buonavuto. So actually,
which before, alone before is like the greatest name ever. Right. Let me but just before, say that's the best name in the world.
Before we get that, so then Zach is reading, the George Stever thing, and he goes, "George Stever, professional guy, huh?" And Rico goes, "St. Louis." And he goes, "Yeah, I know how to read, Rico." And then he reads the next one.
Does that mean he was arrested there? Or because it says St. Louis under his name, but then the next card has an alias by the name. It's strange formatting. They don't match.
So maybe George Stever's nickname is St. Louis Police.
That's what it looks like.
It's possible. And so then we see the next card, and as we mentioned, it's the name is Giuseppe Benvenuto. I can understand why he would you know, use a nickname with a tongue twister last name like that.
I like Benvenuto. I'm going to start calling myself. Actually, no, I'm going to start calling myself his alias because that's also amazing.
It says at the beginning of every Batman, and I was like, it's me, John Welcome. Yeah. Just John dropping Welcome. It into like people. It's like, it's been like six seasons. You never got by John Welcome before. No, it's been John Welcome this whole time.
Well, I'll just gaslight everybody. Joe Welcome. What a name. Joe Welcome. Yeah. And is Joe short for Giuseppe? Because that kind of makes sense in my mind.
That I get. But where's the Welcome coming from, though?
Well, you can't just shorten your actual name.
I will tell you. Benvenuto, translated into English, it means welcome.
Oh, of course. It's spelled slightly different, isn't it?
When you say Benvenuti a Roma, it means welcome to Rome. So
yes,
now it makes.
I just assumed it was because, like, you know, in the mafia, they might have been like, you know, them calling him like Happy or something, where it's just like, yeah, he's a really vicious, brutal psychopath, but we call him Happy because that's kind of funny. Or I thought it would be something like, yeah, he's the most unsociable prick in the world, so we call him Joey Welcome.
Yeah, or, you know, like the old one of, I don't know, calling him Johnny Little, but he's massive.
Yeah. We used to have, like, one of my religion teachers in secondary school was called Shorty Mac because he was, like, 7 foot tall, so we called him Shorty all the time.
and this guy is possibly my favorite of the villains.
Weird too, it's like, oh, look at that list of crimes. I mean, this guy's, he's clearly the best of them.
Well, that's a weird thing, right? I back this guy until I look down and see rape. I can't back you now. I liked you when you were a psycho murderer.
Joe Welcome's card tells us when he was born on March 24th, 1940 in Buffalo. And now you can actually read what it says on the little checkboxes next to it. And it says, use drugs. And there's a mark next to no. But if you go back and look what it said on George Stever, it says yes. So
That doesn't shock
you,
me.
No, I would think the exact opposite. I would think that Mr. Gray was using drugs and that Mr. Brown was not. That's what I would guess.
Okay. I don't know, Mr. Brown, because he's so muted and so quiet. And then you see that mugshot. He looks like he's on something there.
Right. That's true.
Whereas, like, Mr. Gray strikes me as a guy who is just like, he doesn't need it. He's already, like, his mind is already, like, racing a mile a minute.
That's what I was thinking. Because on the surface, you might think, well, of course, you know, he's a psycho. He's doing drugs. But I think he's that crazy. He's not doing drugs.
Right.
He doesn't
need the drugs. Okay, that's fair. And he
just likes thrill, like actual thrill.
It'd be like in Trainspotting, because, like, they're all heroin addicts except for Robert Carlyle's character, because he's just like, I don't know, like, I'm not putting that crap in my body, but he's an absolute ruthless psychopath in it.
He's probably the worst one.
But there's this whole thing, he has this kind of like loftier, like, oh, I want to put that shit in my body. But, like, I'll go over and just beat the crap out of someone for no actual reason because I'm just a nut job. And say, doing things worse than people on drugs would be doing. Yeah. But he's actually perfectly in his own mind. So.
That's the vibe I get from him. He's not well. And that's kind of why I love him, though.
That's why they had to throw him out of the mafia, John.
I want a prequel series about him.
Yeah.
A prestige HBO prequel series just called Joe Welcome.
And I just wanted to be like the main Don is played by Lacey Chabert, so they can have the final scene by her sitting going, "You can't sit with us," and then like, "All right, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm gonna go sit with this British guy over here."
Oh, that could be the finale of the show. He gets a call from some British guy. Oh my God, it's setting up the movie.
You have to do like a million little hints throughout the season of him being like, "What do you think I look like with glasses? What do you think I look like with a mustache?"
Oh, normally I'm not all for these prequel things, but genuinely, you could make this work, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
Because imagine what kind of stuff he did to get kicked out of the mafia.
Yeah, that's all the mystery. Like I was saying in previous episodes, I'd love to know what Mr. Blue's story is. Like, because we never really find out beyond what the little drip we're about to get now.
I kind of love that you don't find out that, though.
Not Mr. Blue, Mr. Gray.
No, that's what I mean. Like in previous episodes, I was saying about Robert Shaw's character. It's like, I'd love to know more about him. But you could do like a Pelham 1-2-3 prequel series of like Mr. Green working on the transit system and how much he hated it.
Oh, that would be great. You could even do it like each episode is about one of the characters.
Yeah, you flesh out all the hostages too, and then at the end they'll be like, people will be like, "There's the movie," and they're like, "I got so involved in the co-ed's life, and she doesn't do anything in the film." It's like, what the hell is that?
No, this is what you do. Don't do another remake. Because why remake it? It's done. Do this.
Yeah,
At
yeah.
least, even if it's bad, right? At least it's something different. At least you've tried.
Well,
Because you know what would happen if they did a
you guys can
remake,
start writing it.
they would have to put in a whole thing about Mr. Blue. It's like, oh, well, we need to understand his motivations, and but it's like, no, we don't. We
Yeah.
don't.
You want him to have like a Heath Ledgerish Joker thing going over it, but like, you know how I got this mustache? Like,
Yeah.
it's like,
They
that's not
would
your
do
actual mustache. It's like, no, I bought it for like 50 cents.
that. Some guy was selling them at the joke shop.
They're having a closing down sale at the Smithies down the road. That's why we got so many of them. We got like four other packs down the back there as well.
Right, and
Oh.
so we also know that Joe Welcome can actually join in on the conversation between George Stevers and Quint about, you know, because he's got an eagle tattoo on his right forearm and a heart tattoo on his left forearm that says "Mother."
Yeah.
So cheesy.
Being the thing though, that's a joke that Hooper makes in Jaws when Quint's talking about like, oh, I got a tattoo removed. And then Hooper goes like, wait a minute, let me guess. Mother. Ah! Like, but then it turns out he'd be like, well, I used to know a guy who had a mother.
We also see his additional arrests. He was arrested for rape, armed robbery, and felony assault. Once again, and it's dated December 1st, 1973, which means it's just maybe a year ago, if not earlier.
Wow.
Oof.
Yeah, that one I think he should probably still be in
Yeah,
prison at this
exactly.
point.
He could have broke out or something. He could be one of those kind of people, you know, or he's got
Well,
connections through the
don't
mob.
you think anyone
But
would
you'd think in
say
that
they're
scenario they would
convicts?
say he's broken out of
That's
prison,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he also comes across from the very limited things we know about him. I get the vibe that he's the sort who would use these things, the assault and the rape. I hate even saying the word, to be honest. I don't think he was doing it for pleasure. I think he uses those kind of things for, like, to gain stuff,
Well,
like a power
I
thing.
mean, I don't know if you either remember, but at the very beginning of the movie, you know, he does make some very lewd gestures to a woman who, thankfully for her, was not on the in the front car, because we only saw her right at the
Yeah.
beginning. And then he did make other
I could be
comments.
wrong, but I
He did
thought.
make other gestures to one of the other women, and you know, Blue sort of moved him away.
That's true, actually. I forgot about that one. Because the first one I was going to say, I thought he was just sort of a power play thing. But no, that second one felt a bit more real, actually. That's a good point.
And
Oh, it
I
all
believe
ties
it was a
together. It makes
hooker.
sense how he's got
I think it
that.
was a hooker that he was, you know, when he talked about that she's a $2 whore or something like that.
Yeah. Oh no. Oh, that makes him
Yeah.
worse.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it feels like they're building up Mr. Grace so much to be like a Mr. Blondish type of like. It almost feels like they created like Mr. Blonde. Tarantino does like I want to see the payoff of this guy who's clearly like a raving loon,
And
who's a
then cut off
really,
someone's
really
ears.
bad guy. Yeah, he says like, because Mr. Grace never really does like he does bad stuff, but it never pays off into like this guy is going to be a liability and he's the worst of the worst and stuff. Whereas in Reservoir Dogs, it is like no, this guy is a liability and he is the worst of the worst, and you actually get to see him do like really horrific stuff to people and stuff. So it's yeah. I feel like yeah, Mr. Gray like walked so Mr. Blonde could run is basically the
Totally.
vibe.
Like, I
Yeah.
always heard, oh, you know, Tarantino was inspired by this. I didn't realize it's like, oh, not just inspired. He's lifted stuff from this
Oh
movie.
yeah,
Wow.
100%. Yeah.
So he's always been making like, what phrase should we use? Like collages, let's say, of film. I thought that was something he started doing later on, Tarantino, but no, day one.
No. From the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's a bad guy. Joey, welcome over
But a
here.
great character.
Exactly.
Which you have to specify these days, because these days you're not allowed to say you like a character because everybody thinks that means you support them.
But he is one of the few people from the main cast that is still around, you know, 51 years later. Still talked about
Oh,
it,
wow.
you know.
Amazing. Is he still acting?
Yes.
Oh, they should have got him into The Penguin.
Maybe. And then Garber continues and goes, "Hey, where's that other guy? The guy who fried himself?" And Rico goes, "No card on him." He goes, well, we got a confirmation on his prints from immigration. Name is Bernard Ryder. Mercenary soldier. Big wars, I guess.
I'm surprised that wasn't like, again, in a more modern film, I feel that would be more drawn out. It's like, we don't know who he is. Like, it's going to be, and there'll be another ongoing investigation into who Mr. Blue is. But they're like, yeah, no card on him. We got all his information on him right here. Like,
no, that's actually my favorite thing. Well, not my favorite, one of my favorite things about the whole movie is, you know, because they find that out and then they figure out it must be the motor man that's missing then, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate how quickly, like to us, the viewer, they're getting this done. We don't need a 10-minute scene of him figuring this stuff out or figuring out the motor man's, because that'd be another 10 minutes on top of the 10 minutes finding out about the British guy.
It's presenting us the sci-fi concept of a competent bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Where everything works the way it's supposed to. And it's just like, yeah, the transit police just know how to get things done. They're just like going like, yeah, we didn't know he doesn't have a card. But we got all his information, though, still, from somewhere else. You know?
The transit cops are the real cops.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it took us like 2 minutes.
No, I like that because, yeah, a modern movie would drag it out. We don't need this dragging out. We don't need it.
Yeah, we have Garner with...
For a movie from the era, this is actually quite short. Mm-hmm. Like, I could imagine this movie being 3.5 hours with an intermission and everything.
I mean, basically, Garber within two sentences just says all of it. He goes, well, none of these guys know how to drive a train. That means the motorman's just missing. And he goes, did you get that list of motormen? And then he gets cut off as he ends the minute.
Yeah, well, again, though, that could be, these days, that's what they would do. And it'd be like 10 minutes of him like looking through documents. He'd be like, my God, do you know what this means? It's the motorman! Like, yes, we know!
Well, yeah. I did also, it just reminded me a little bit, too, because, like, yeah, Bernard Ryder, to remind me of the end of like a film called what 10 years later, The Hitcher, where you don't know the identity of Rutger Hauer's character for like 98% of it. And then when they do ID him, it's like, yeah, it's John Ryder, you call him. I'm like, oh, that's weird. And I was like, maybe that was a reference, but I think in The Hitcher, they say they're very open about it being like, no, it's a reference to Riders on the Storm, the Doors song. So it's like, yeah, in that case, it is a I don't think Robert Shaw's character here is named after Riders on the Storm by the Doors.
Maybe. Yeah. You never know.
But it's just ironic, though. Ryder, and he was, you know, riding a subway. It's like, yeah, that's kind of, that's a joke.
It's right? A stretch, but I'll give you
it. It's Ryder with a Y.
Yeah, it still works, though. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's you know, the guy, you know, he holds up a subway, I think people ride. He's called John Ryder, or Bernard Ryder.
Okay. All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five movies about hijacking. So why don't you guys do it snake fashion? Decide who's going to go first. Start with your number five, then five, then four, then four, then three, then three, then two.
Okay.
Ooh, okie dokie. Okay, I'll go first then, I guess. Because I was hoping you were going to jump in then. I have an honorary mention as well, because I just couldn't fit it onto my list, but I'll do that at the end. So number five, because this will not shock Niall, I imagine, just knowing about my interests. The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, of course, of course.
Of course, of course. I didn't think of that initially, because it almost doesn't jump to mind as a hijacking movie, even though that is what he's doing, essentially.
Yeah,
he's hijacking from himself, but he's hijacking the submarine.
That's really interesting. I've had one other guest who's mentioned it, and he was the first one to mention it, and I'd never thought of it as a hijacking movie until he mentioned it, and then I was like, oh, of course. You know, once...
Yeah. That's the thing. It doesn't seem like it is until you actually think about the story. You're like, no, he is. He's hijacking it from A, himself, and B's government. Yeah. And it's a great movie. It's really interesting. It could be boring. It's just, you know, it's set in a submarine. Where they're going to go, what they're going to do. Somehow they make it interesting, even though Connery's just doing Connery. Unsurprising, yeah. He's always great, even when he's just being himself, which is 99% of the time. You know.
So that's your honorary mention, though, John?
No, that's my number five. I'm doing the honorary one five? At the end. Yeah, so you go. We're doing Snake.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go this one. I'm going to get this one. It's actually a really great film. I feel guilty putting it at number five, but because it's such a bummer of a film, I'm putting down United 93.
Oh, I almost put that on my list, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a phenomenal film, but it's also one of the ones that's like, yeah, but I don't want to put it like, it's like, you know, But my number one's like a really fun film.
I reckon we've got the same like three, maybe.
I think once after this point, we're probably going to get in for like, yeah, might not be in the same order, but it'll probably be the same films basically. But yeah, so just I have to give it its due, but also I'm like, I don't want to, you know, to take up too much of the kind of the vibe of being like, yeah, hey, it was really horrific that the historical event happened, and there's a really heart-wrenching film about it happening.
It's a great movie though, because that could be quite again, that could just be quite cheesy,
yeah,
and like jingoistic, but it doesn't come across that way to me.
Because the thing is, in the time where they had like the Nick Cage World Trade Center film, which was very like, you know,
it's cheap, all right, but it's toast. Yeah,
but like, yeah, and they were really were trying to be like, oh, you know, there was a real romanticizing of everything, whereas United 93 is like, no, this is basically portraying it as bare bones as it would happen. So, and yeah, really phenomenal film. Do recommend people watch it, but it's one of those ones you'll only ever want to watch once, probably. But yeah, that's my number
five. I've seen it like 13
good
times.
Good choice.
Wow. Really? Wow. I cannot imagine ever wanting to watch it again. I was just like, oh, those poor people.
No, I do like it, and I've watched it a couple of times, but
I
it's one
it,
of those,
I find it to be a very inspirational.
I've got to be in
to
a
watch.
Specific mood. Yeah, like one of my favorite films ever is Graves of the Fireflies. Grave, I said plural. But I can only watch it, I think I've watched it two times. Yeah. I'm not going to watch Grave of the Fireflies every weekend, you know.
Yeah.
So number four.
No, it's number four for Nihilist.
In at number four.
No, 1 second, Nihilist is your number four.
Oh, okay.
Of course, yeah, we're doing it that way.
Snake
yeah.
is? Come on, I know
it's not. We do, but it's we got up early to do this show.
it's afternoon. What are you talking about?
That's early for me at the weekend. God damn it, I was up till 3 a.m.
Oh, number four, I'm gonna put. I feel a bit bad putting it this low down, but I think because it's technically, it's like it's a hijacking. But it's not the hijacking in the way we normally would think of a hijacking. But I'm putting Die Hard 1, the first Die Hard, because they're hijacking that building, basically. Whereas I think when our mentally we think of a hijacking as like, oh, it's like a vehicle, basically.
Yeah.
But they do take over that building. You know, you could say, is it a heist or is it a hijack? And I'm thinking, is that good a film? I'm going to count it
it's
as
included,
a hijack,
it's
so
included.
I put it on the list.
There you go.
Yeah, I think yeah. it does. Yeah, I think it counts.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, and but because even though it's probably it's, you know, potentially the best film on my list, because of its sort of like its technical, like, well, I'm gonna bump it down to four, even though it's like it's, you know, no one's gonna argue the quality of Die Hard. So.
Oh no.
But yeah,
fantastic.
I'm putting that as my number four.
I was gonna put it on my list, and because I thought the listeners would come for me, I cut it. For the same reasons. Same reason. I thought that they'll attack me for saying.
Did you
that.
Cut it for Die Hard 2 though? And you're like, oh my god, what a terrible mistake I've made.
Maybe. but my number four, in at number four, the new entry, The Taking of Pelham 123.
Hey.
I really enjoyed this. I thought it was great. I'll talk more about that when I may or may not return. But yeah, I thought it was fantastic. It was great. And centers around the hijacking, unlike Die Hard.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
oh, yeah, so you go next yeah, again. Yeah.
So my number three, I was building up to this because it's my number three, Die Hard 2.
Oh, man.
Because I'm a defender of Die Hard 2. I know some people aren't too keen on it. I think it's a great sequel. I think if they'd done it again for three, it wouldn't have worked. I think it would have, you know, it would have destroyed destroyed the franchise. It was destroyed after three anyway. but two works for me. It makes sense. It's the same, but without totally copying. It's interesting to have him in this airport situation. It's got a cool villain working out naked for some reason. You know?
Yeah.
I really like it. I think it's fun. It's a good film. And again, it's all about the hijacking. That's integral.
My number three is going to be The Taking of Pelham 123.
Hey!
1998! No, it's the
oh, God, imagine. Has anyone done that? Has anyone put the remake in above the original?
Nobody, their top three is just like The Taking of Pelham 123.
Nobody's brought up either of the remake.
Well, I thought like the Tony Scott one might have got it because people love the Tony Scott one, so I thought that would have been in there.
Yeah, but as much as people might love it, right? I've not seen it. Would anyone go, Oh yeah, I like it more than this though.
I'm assuming there will be some crazy people out there, but you know.
Wow. Well, but no, yeah, so the original, and the only reason it's down too, because it's just little things like the fact that, like, I wish we had got to know the hostages more. I wish we had got to know, you know, a little bit more background on the criminals and stuff, because they kind of brush past it a little bit. But you know, it's that's a minor flaw in that, like, well, the film's great without that. But it's just, if I were to add in little things, I'd be like, well, I'll just give it like a little, you know, beef up that stew a little bit, you know, give it a bit more. A bit more heart in there, for, you know, to make us care about the hostages and stuff more and more.
I kind of like the streamlined nature.
Yeah. But then that's my number three. My number two is a film that, as I mentioned earlier, does somewhat do that a little bit. Is Speed. Keanu Reeves's Speed. I don't think that was Jean de Bond Speed, but Keanu Reeves in Speed, basically. But the fact that does, I feel like you do know those characters by the end. You are very invested in all the different people on the bus, and very much involved, you know, with Annie and with, you know, Keanu, everyone in there, and does a great job of, like, you're able to dart back and forth without, you know, from outside the bus to inside the bus without seeming too jarring. Because sometimes, like, I like a thing, you know, heist kind of thing where they keep it all in the one area, you know, so he really feels like you're stuck in there and stuff.
You're one, yeah.
But I think Speed is very good at sort of like making you go in and out and in and out. But still, by the end though, when they get off the bus, when it's all over, you do have a kind of like that feeling of, oh, they're gone, you know, they did it, they're finally over. When they finally get that damn thing, well, they don't stop it, but they, you know, they get everyone off and it blows up. But yeah, just really, really, really great film. Like, it's kind of like, it was the mutation of Die Hard, obviously. Just to be like, yeah, well, if we did that, but it was a proper hijacking.
It feels like it could have been a Die Hard script.
Oh, 100%. What you 100% could have done Speed as with John McClane, and people would have batted an eye. They probably would have got to the point of being like, again,
it's like, hey, we've got to that point.
Yeah. But, like, you know, the fact that it went with a vengeance to be like, oh, no, this is different, though. So it's like, because he's literally running around an entire city. For this to be like, he's stuck on a bus. Get out of here. But no, yeah, really, really great. Like, it's such a, again, that's a fun film. It's got a great villain performance. And it's one of those ones that, like, if you are flipping around the channels and if you come upon Speed, it's hard to tear away. It's hard to be like, well, now I'm going to watch all Speed now. What's happening? It's like, I know I'm getting married in 45 minutes, but, like, there's 60 minutes of Speed left right here. So,
all right. Excellent. So, John, it's up to you for your number two.
Yeah, my number two. I know Niall will be angry this is number two, I think. My number two, Con Air.
Oh.
the reason this is number two and not one is because, and I'll laugh when I get to my number one, is because I think my number one is a little bit more of a serious, you're going to laugh when I reveal it, a little bit more of a serious movie. Whereas Con Air, I love it, right? I love it. It's fun. But it's a little bit like, okay, it's a hijack movie, but it's a little bit crazy. Like, at the end, you know, like, if so it does feel a little bit like, oh wow, what the hell. It takes the stakes down a little bit when it's that nuts, you
know? Yeah,
which doesn't mean I don't love it. I would actually choose to watch my number two more often than I would choose to watch my number one. But I absolutely adore this. We've watched this together. It's a fun party movie, you know.
Yeah
So that's my number one, isn't it? It's my number one.
All right. What is your number one?
The movie I just called slightly more serious than Con Air. My number one is Speed. Okay, it's not a totally serious. It's not Pelham.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it comes across a little bit more dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, Con Air, it never felt that dangerous to me because you're having a fun time. And Speed is fun. Don't get me wrong. It's fun, but you do feel like danger.
I feel like the characters in Speed are people.
Yes.
Whereas the characters in Con Air are cartoons.
Yes, like, which is great. So I put Speed at number one because in the world of a hijacking movie, it's got more hijacking stakes to me.
Yeah.
Because you connect a little bit more, you know.
Oh.
And it's a great film, as you everything you said. You know, I mean, not everything needs a sequel, but it's a shame to see what they did with the sequel. you could have done a good sequel somehow. You could have come up with something.
I'm surprised that they're not. You know. It's been so long that they've not gone like, yeah, we can just come back now and do another one. Like, we can just do a Speed 3. Just call it Speed colon something. And just bypass the second film altogether.
Do you think Keanu would do it? I know he's come back for a few things. I actually think he would be like, no, I'm not doing that one.
I'm telling you, he wouldn't come back.
No. Because that's I was going to jokingly say Speed 2 is my number one, to be honest. Because Speed, calling it Speed, and you're on one of the slowest forms of transport. What were you thinking?
I was imagining now, though, I was going to make a joke about then, like, oh, Jason Patrick's waiting in the wings to be like, well, if Keanu says no, and you've already written that script. But I was like, is Jason Patrick still alive? I kind of got worried that he died or something.
Oh, God knows. God knows. I'm not going to say it, obviously. I think I know what your number one is.
Oh, well, my number one is, we're flipped, John, because my number one is Con Air. And it's because it's just like a wild, wild ride. I love Con Air so much. It's one of those things that like I could quote you it back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. I love the fact that it is like a cartoon cast of like, yeah, let's come up with this bunch of like serial killers and stuff. Cyrus the Virus, and then Garland Green is like Steve Buscemi, but he's doing like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah,
I love the fact that it's got the renowned weirdo Nicolas Cage as the action hero, which now even that you're going back there like, yeah, it's like Nicolas Cage, like, but he's ripped and he's got like a big long hair and he's strutting
sexy.
Around. Like,
he's got that sexy shot where he flips his head.
yeah, sexy smoldering Nicolas Cage and stuff. He's him and Bubba from Ford. Like everything about it's so like it's so just going. Wild. It's just taking massive swings and stuff, and like everything about it is just like down to stupid bullshit. Like that guy trying to steal the other plane, and then getting soaked in petrol, and been like going up to a guy. I feel they only named him Cyrus the Virus so they could make the joke of the guy going to him, Cy, and Malkovich going Anara and flicking the cigarette at him, and then him just blowing up. Like it's incredible. So that's why I feel like Con Air, and I think I do have many memories of watching it with like different people over the years.
Yeah,
and every time people getting sucked in, and at the end they've been like, "Oh, that's incredible!"
It's one of those we've put on before at parties, thinking, "Oh, that'll be on in the background," and it doesn't go on in the background. Everyone starts watching it.
Yeah, everyone gets lured in to Con Air, or as my friend Dave calls it, "Cons in the Air."
He's not wrong.
But I think he kept cracking that joke throughout us watching it as well. But he's just like, "What do you mean Cusack's taking the day off? Doesn't he realize that there are cons in the air? What are we doing? We gotta take care of this."
There used to be a wrestling manager called Cyrus the Virus, and I'm like, "You can't do that. you're just using the same name. What?" No.
I mean, I think that's wrestling's kind of thing. It's like, yep, we're just taking a...
But usually you twist it. He was just called Cyrus the Virus.
But this was...
He is one of the greatest wrestling managers of all time, Don Callis, though. So. Who's bald rep. He's bald now. Yeah. He had long, sexy hair then.
And, of course, John Malkovich himself, been a famous baldy.
Yeah.
You watch that him playing Dustin Hoffman's son in Death of a Salesman, where he's wearing a wig, and you're like, what the hell is this? Get that off your head, Malkovich.
You're a disgrace to our people. Get that off.
Oh, but again, I always had a problem with the fact that, like, because John Cusack, who I also love, is in, he's in Con Air. And I've seen him in interviews going, like, that's this one big regret. He's just like, oh, such a stupid, ridiculous film. I hate Con Air.
What?
And I'm just like, you shut your beautiful mouth, Cusack. All right.
Because it is stupid. It is ridiculous. And that's why it's good.
Yeah, so, like, that's one of your best films, man. Like, yeah. Better Off Dead's ridiculous as well. No, you're not calling that stupid. I was like, Better Off Dead and Con Air are fantastic. You can tell me they're set in the same universe. I'm like, yeah, makes sense to me, I guess.
See, some people who know, it's quite funny, the people who know our movie tastes from different worlds, like, because obviously people know us from Batman, or people will know us as the people who at parties don't shut up about Star Wars. But then other people will know us as like watching David Lynch. And things like this. So they're like, oh, you must like Archie things. And it's like, yeah, doesn't stop you liking Con Air. So people get a bit confused when they're like, oh, yeah, so you've been to see a David Lynch movie at the cinema. You've been to see Eraserhead at the cinema. What are you seeing next? And I'll be like, Fast and Furious. What?
They might be thinking you're putting United 93 at number one. I'm like, no, the cartoon bullshit. It's way better.
There's room for all this on your plate.
Yeah. But also, we're doing like we have to do one of those posters of us standing like crossed arms back to back, John, doing the kind of like this guy motion with the thumb, but like so our number ones and twos are like they're flip flopping on us over here.
Yeah, I almost pivoted and put Conair number one as well. But I thought in the spirit of the question, it's a better hijacking movie.
Yeah, if that makes sense. I don't know. Those cons hijacked that airplane.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like to be a good hijacking movie, I want stakes. Yeah. And they crash a plane into the Vegas Strip, and it's not. There's still no stakes, which is insane. The amount of deaths would be through the roof, right?
Yeah,
literally.
Crazy. Not in Con Air. Not in that universe.
Yeah,
I think the only person that gets taken out is Danny Trejo.
That would be like one of the biggest disasters in American history.
People are like, there's still people out gambling, like right next to it, just like, yep. It's like crazy. A serial killer just goes over and is like, all right, I'm betting my life savings on this now.
Absolutely bonkers.
But it's the fact that it's even got like every July, I have to send people the clip of Malkovich reading that note from Nick Cage's daughter of like, my daddy is coming home on July 14th. My birthday is July 14th. I'm going to meet my daddy for the first time ever on July 14th. In fact, too, someone on YouTube has made a clip of just that little bit as well. So it's like, yeah, but no, Speed doesn't have any moments like that for me. There's many, you know, many great moments in there. But I'm not sending any clips of Speed to people on certain days.
True,
so.
True, yeah.
But yeah, so there we go. That's our combined top five, I guess. All right. Top 10.
Those are both great, great lists. Thank you very much. So we will now play the daily game of Name That Remake. And let's see if either of you is able to quickly guess which remake we're going to get today. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Okay, the original came out in 1968, and the remake came out in 2001. Do either of you have a guess yet?
Dr. T and the Women? Any chance?
No.
No.
Okay, so it's about a group of astronauts that are on a mission far into space.
Oh, I know
Got
what
it.
This is.
Got
yep.
it.
Yep.
you said before me now, so you can go. But I think starts with a P.
Yeah. 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 Is it a film that has like 5 billion sequels as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a film I've seen 5,000 times.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to say it's that terrible Planet of the Apes.
That's correct.
Yeah. There we go.
Fantastic. And you know what? Most of the sequels are good.
Mm.
It's rare. In fact, I'm going to argue all of them are good, except that specific remake, which isn't. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but I'd rather watch.
It's got great makeup in it. I was like, oh, well, good. Like, I won't watch it again, but I'll happily look at pictures of Tim Roth in it.
I've got it on Blu-ray because I bought the collection, and it's like, no, that's but. I'll consider that a freebie.
great makeup and great Danny Elfman score. Very unusual Danny Elfman score in that, but like, there's still not enough to be like. Yeah, I'm gonna sit down and watch Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes.
Like, I'd rather even watch the one before. What was it? A Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which is made for about $5.
Yeah, guys walking up the side of a tree is the climax. Then one of them falls off. Okay,
that original though, mwah. And what a second one, the sequel, nuts.
Yeah, we should really get around to doing a review of Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes, though, John. That might be incentive for us. We might go back and be like, you know what? It's the best one.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. You've inspired us.
I'm always here to inspire.
But
all right. So, would you guys like to tell everyone where they can find you?
I mean, you know, do you want to take this one, John? Or do you want me?
I was gonna let you go because I always do it on our show. I was like, oh, I'll let Niall promote the show.
Okay. Well, for combination purposes, I might as well just do the two shows that we do together.
Yeah.
Well, did because one of them's now. Done. But
we keep threatening bonus episodes and we haven't done one yet.
yeah But yeah, so that one, the one that's completed is Miami Minutes, where me and John, just the two of us, broke down and talked about each minute of 1987's Miami Connection, 1 minute at a time. And it was because, you know, again, no one in it went on to do anything else. So it's mostly we just had to like come up with stuff. We just had to riff on it, basically. There was no research involved. So,
and let me say, listeners, if you're worried, oh, is it going to be one of those podcasts where they just talk about so-called bad movies and just make fun of them the whole time? We have fun on it, but with love.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's a reverent podcast towards Miami Connection. And yeah, we just sort of basically ended up writing a spec novelization where we fleshed out all the characters and stuff, yeah. Which I now really want to go and adapt into an actual book and then try to sell it somewhere. It's been like, yeah, go to YK Kim and be like, dude, we wrote it for you. You can have like some of the profits at least. But then, yes, our main show is Bat Minute, which me and John also host, but we get on a wide range of guests. There's a podcast breaking down the Batman films 1 minute at a time. And we have all sorts on from all walks of life. We do try also to be a little bit educational, so we do come in with some research on the various people who pop up in there and the various influences on the films, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, that's we've done 89 up to and including Batman and Robin. We did Mask of the Phantasm. And now this year we're back again, breaking down the Adam West movie, which is like not aired yet, but will be airing imminently.
It's coming soon.
And yeah, that's our main baby, basically.
Yeah, check all that out, everyone.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So thank you both for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's been a lively discussion. That goes for sure.
You expect nothing less.
No, I didn't. I knew what to expect here. I will be back tomorrow with John. You know, sorry, Niall. We've already had yours.
We're going to shoot you like they shoot Giuseppe.
That's right. So I'll be back tomorrow with John. But until then,
Gesundheit.